Welcome to the DC Practice Growth Show, where we share proven tools and tactics to grow your practice. And here's your host, new patient generating expert who self-built his multi-million dollar practices, Ryan Ryder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DC Practice Growth Podcast. I'm super excited to be with you today. I'm talking today about a topic that is, I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, the biggest downfall of small businesses, period. Forget about just the chiropractic profession. And that is really the concept of building a team. Most mom and pop industries really, really, really suck at it. So the topic today is how to build a rock star team, how to build a rock star team. You probably need a little bit of context before I continue to teach. And one, anyone who's made it in life really will tell you that there's no such thing as a self-made person, really. They've either a lot of people have helped them get to where they want to be, or they have an incredible team helping them get to where they want to be. That's the first thing. Next, if you really understand that, you know, when it comes to, I mean, I guess for me, I had a real epiphany one day. I was sitting in an audience in a conference, and the speaker told us what the definition of a business is. And he said this, he said, the definition of a business is a profit-making enterprise that works without you. Think about that for a second. A profit-making enterprise that works without you or has the ability to work without you. Just at that very moment, I guess almost everyone in the room who was self-employed had an O-S-H-I-T moment where they were realized that really, you know, they don't have a business. They have a high-paying job, a lot of them. But you don't have a business. You don't have a scalable business that can work without you. And then really following on from that, one of my biggest mentors in the same session spoke about how business is a team sport. It's without a shadow of a doubt a team sport. What we have in our industry is this weird little niche called chiropractic, is that we are sometimes too profitable doing, you know, the bare minimum. And I think in other industries, they benefit from the fact that, you know, they have to build a team to become profitable. We can sometimes hack it and be quite profitable. However, we will always be limited in some way, shape, or form. So let's go through a little bit. So let me give you some facts. In America, two out of three businesses or two out of three businesses, with self-employed or et cetera, whatever it is, but the broad statistic is two out of three people or businesses will never hire one employee. 63 or 64% of all businesses in America will only ever break even or make a loss. And if we really understand that, you know, if I really go in depth the statistics about how many people employ one or two or three or four or five, you really start to get an understanding of A, how tough it is. So we often just talk about, hey, build a team. Someone might give you some coaching, or you might listen to a podcast or something. It's like, oh, you need a team. Yeah, that's fantastic. I think everyone acknowledges that in some way, shape, or form. Some people shy away from it for many reasons. One of them is the idea of taking on more risk, if you will, because it's always your biggest cost base is a team. But I'm going to help you really change it around to understanding it's your biggest asset. When you realize that, you know, as an entrepreneur, you never, as a business owner, whether you choose to practice full time or not, you have to run that business as if it's able to run without you. And what's wrongly been positioned in front of the whole marketplace as the thing that's going to help us do it, the magical thing that's going to help us do it, it's just systems. Well, I tell you right now, systems without a team is not systems at all. It's really not, you know. And a lot of the times you'll hear me say this a lot in my coaching, it's not systems that businesses or practices are lacking. Actually, the chiropractic industry is pretty good at selling or at least incorporating systems in their practice. I mean, every second person I know in some way, shape or form has either got a manual or a list of stuff in their practice of systems they should be doing but not doing. The answer to all our problems is simply including another system. You'll hear me say this a lot, is that I truly believe that the thing that we lack the most in our practices is structure, not systems, structure. And if you understand going on the terms of how to build a rockstar team, if you understand this concept, you're going to have a lot better chance of being successful at it. And the concept is that the context is way more important than the content. The context is way more important than the content. So let me give you the lay of the land first, and let me explain to you kind of what happens in this, what if in this entrepreneur journey or opening a practice. First, you have someone that opens the practice, and that's really our startup. The startup, you know, often believes that the better they are clinically, the busier they'll be. And simply believes in the fact that build it and they will come. All I need to do is be great at the doing of the thing and I'll be very successful. That's stage number one, startup. We've all been there. Then we move to operator. Operator is really focused on getting it all done, right? They're focused on, you know, the false belief in this is the more they personally do, the better or the busier they will be. So they start realizing that they need to do more than just a startup, and they start incorporating, whether it's marketing strategies or online strategies, systemizing things, etc. But really all the work comes from them working harder. Right? Once we pass the operator phase, we move into the owner phase, if you will, owner phase. And the owner is really primarily is there to add value through building the right team, creating culture, and measuring results. Let me say that again. When you become an owner of a business, not just an operator, your value you bring to the marketplace, or not the marketplace, rather, in your business, is that you are there to think primarily about the right team, creating culture, and measuring results. The false belief that holds us in that certain area of just being an operator and not moving to the next phase, which is a director, investor, the owner phase, the false belief there is only I can teach or lead and I need to know everything to do it. So I jump on so many calls with people, either at my masterminds or some work that I do in some way, shape or form with them. And it's not just in the chiropractic industry. And a lot of times I'll say, why haven't you implemented X, Y, and Z? And most of the time it's a variation of, I need to learn. I just haven't got time to learn, I don't know, the new computer system. And to which I'll normally respond, why the hell do you have to learn it at all? To give you context for that, if you have to know everything in your business, you will always be the bottleneck, right? And you can't know everything. So you need to keep an eye on everything by measuring, remember, right team, right culture, measuring results. But if you have to know everything to teach it, you're in big trouble because often the learning curve is steep. So you're really in big trouble if you start going down that, if you will, modus operandi to grow a business. And that's where most people get stuck. And then the last phase or section is become when you move from an owner to a director / investor. And this is your job is to question, probe, think, anticipate crisis, predict consequences via scorecards and spreadsheets and analyzing numbers. You look at trends. You're primarily paid to think. You do more, you know, Einstein said this, genius happens in leisure time. You know, the more you do, the less productive you are for the team or your role in the team. So those are kind of the phases. Startup, then you become a very successful operator, very high paid a lot of the time, but it's always only about you. Then you become an owner and you try really scale this business to really get it to function a little bit without you, even if you're adjusting full time. It's not about getting you out of adjusting. It's that the rest of the thing happens without you completely and you build the right team and culture, etc. And then you move to director, investor, where your job is to think and to troubleshoot and to push the barriers and in effect be more in the clouds and spend more time working on the business than in the business. It's the same in the owner section, but really those are your four phases. And if you look at really there's someone I'd highly recommend you seek out and his name is Daniel Priest. He wrote a great book called Key Personal Influence, and he always talks about how similar type of thing. That is my definition when it comes to practice owners. But he often talks about you really start a business, and then he talks about the next phase being your lifestyle business, and then the next stage being a business, right? So what he talks about in the lifestyle business, where most chiropractors I work with are, is interesting. His definition with that is that most people think a lifestyle business is actually like your solopreneur. That is not what it is. That's the first page. I'm not talking about solopreneur. I'm talking about a lifestyle business is often anywhere in the vicinity of, you know, 2/4 to up to 10 employees. That can still be a lifestyle business, right? Where you can get away with murder sometimes because you can just pretty much get anything done by having a conversation. When the business, like our business, over 100 team members and over 8 sites, gets bigger, now the big thing, if I get this across to you here, is the big thing that stops people from moving from a lifestyle business, which can be very profitable, very successful, $1 million businesses, even more, many, many, many times, but the thing that stops you from moving to the next phase is really this one word, and it's called complexity. I'm going to give you the math now. But when you're building a team, you have to understand that there's these laws of complexity that are not spoken enough about. Most of the people, you know, most of the people coaching in this field have never built a business. They've only ever built a operator, a successful practice that they're now teaching people how to run. But they've never built a business. They've never ever got the business. The only way they have had to scale that business is really essentially going to consulting or coaching in some way, shape, or form. I want to be clear, that's not what I do. You know, I've 8 practices over £5 million, you know, close to $7 million every single year. I make a ton of money just from that business. And then I teach people how we did that in many different fields, right? So the problem is that most of the people that are coaching in certain mom and pop industries have only ever had successful, if you will, lifestyle businesses or operator businesses. And that's fine for a lot of people, but it does mean that they don't have a certain context for bigger business or doing stuff in a bigger scale. So that's the first thing I guess I'd get across to you, is that those different stages. So we have startup, then an operator, then an owner, then a direct investor. Or you have your solopreneur, your startup, then you've got your, this is by Daniel Priestley's kind of definition, then you've got your lifestyle business, and then you've got your proper business. Specific for proper business, you really have to think about structure and context a lot, you know. With a lifestyle business, actually surprisingly, do you know what the number one thing, according to Daniel, that correlates with a very successful lifestyle business, in most cases, it is that the owner or face of the business in some way, shape, or form is just a little bit famous. That is like a key distinction at that size, you know, because they're maybe not that great at marketing, etc. But at that point, one of the keys for that business being successful is that the owner in some way, shape, or form is just a little bit famous. Not crazy famous, just a little bit famous, even if it's locally in your community. So that is just one factor. Now, here's a statistic. Do you know this, that only 1% of businesses on the planet will ever turn over more than $5 million? Let me say that again. Only 1% of businesses on the planet will ever turn over more than $5 million. So why is that the case? This is the most underspoken about thing in business. The number one reason that businesses don't grow is got to do with, as I said earlier, complexity. So here's the stats. If you've got 3 employees right now, you have to understand that if you want to go from 3 employees to 4, it sounds pretty easy, right? It's 3 team members, it's 3 products, 3 sites, whatever it is, 3 services, whatever it is. When you go from 3 and you want to add 1 more product, site, person, whatever it is, to your business, essentially you're only growing the business by 33%, right? But you know that by adding 1 extra person from 3 to 4, you increase complexity by 400%. Let me say that again. Going from 3 to 4 products, people, services, you increase the size of the team by 33%, but the complexity by 400%. When you get to slightly more team members, some of you listen to this will have this already. When you go from 12 team members, people, products, whatever it is, to 14 people, product, team members, whatever it is, do you know that the increased complexity by simply going from 12 to 14 is equivalent to the amount of complexity that the business originally had when it had 8 to 10 employees? Let me say that again. So the first 8 to 10 employees, that all that it took to run that business by simply going from 12 to 14 employees or sites or team members, whatever it is, you increase the complexity equivalent to the first 8 to 10 by adding 2 people. It gets crazy. The statistics continue to get crazier and crazier and crazier when you really look at the size of the business. So complexity is the number one thing that stops teams from growing or businesses from growing if they want to scale. Often it's a wise decision to keep the business, if you will, by his definition, a lifestyle business, because lifestyle is not solopreneur. It's still a great business that turns over $1 to $2 million a year, but has anywhere, it could be more than that, by the way, but has anywhere, it could be up to 10 team members. You might want to keep it there. If you do not have structure and you've got no knowledge of business, this is what everyone talks about, turning over big numbers and high volume and whatever it is. You can't have that conversation if you're not having the team conversation, because you'll never maintain it. How many times in this chiropractic profession have we heard about people seeing massive, massive numbers to at least being halving their numbers? I've personally worked with people that came to me that all started the conversation with, I was seeing 700 a week and now I'm seeing 250. What's going on? I can't tell you how many people I've had that conversation with, because your energy of the person is a finite thing, right? And there's always a couple keys to building a successful business that I talk about, or a successful practice. One of them is energy. Other one is certainty. Other one is business skills. And I always say being able to market your practice is huge, right? It's the fire to your any business fuel if you can put people through the front door. But certainly one of them is energy. So what everyone does is, when energy is amazing, but life happens and energy waxes and wanes, that they can maintain that, but they can never maintain it without a team. So how do we get over that? Listen carefully. This is going to probably be a two-part podcast, because I'm going to give you the structure today of a couple of things that I think will help you build that team, massively important, and some required reading that I think will be important to you. And it all comes from the concept of this. There are only two things in the world that you can leverage, or in business rather. Okay, in business, not in the world, in business, because when it comes to bigger business, you can leverage money too. But there's two things I need you to understand the concept now. One is, you can leverage people and you can leverage systems. Those are the only two things you can leverage to grow a business: people and systems. So having said that, what you need to understand is that if you're missing the people, it's going to be very difficult for you to create a sustainable business. I will tell you that what happens, the context is way more important than the content, as I said earlier. Meaning, how you run that, the thing that holds it together is way more important. So, a couple things that I'm going to say is, if you really want to get good at things, if you really want to create freedom, if you really want to create a business that where you can go on holiday and it still makes you an income and it still grows while you're away, you have to understand that the most successful businesses on the planet have a few things in common. In fact, there's a book written about this. The book is called Good to Great by Jim Collins, right? And there's loads of other books that I'll push in that direction. But one of the concepts that he talks about in Good to Great is that all they do in Good to Great is they analyze what the common features are in the most successful businesses on the planet in different areas. One of them is, and kind of the key aspect of this entire podcast, is that all great businesses, one of the things they have in common is they all have a set of core values, or a code of honor, as one of my mentors calls it, a set of core values. So what is a core value? A core value is a set of statements, usually 6 to 10, I'm going to say this, the less the better, less is more, that defines the look and feel of the business. There's one statement here that I want to be critical. You may be listening to this now and you may be saying, oh, I already know this. Well, here's the defining thing that makes what I'm talking about different from what most people teach is there's been a miscommunication in the marketplace in businesses when it came to core values or code of honor, or whatever it is that you have, your core values. There's also mission statements, etc. I'm not a big mission statement fan because most of them sit on, if you will, on a wall and gather dust. But your core values, you can live. So here's the big difference, the big defining thing about the statements and the core values. If you understand this one concept, I promise you, your statements are going to be different. I'll give you some examples now. But one of the things you have to understand is that core values were originally designed inward facing. That doesn't mean that the customers can't see it, but they're a tool for the business, for the people in the business, right? They're a tool for the team members. They are not a tool for, but they can easily be seen by the customers. That's not a problem at all, but they are designed to, if you will, they need to be behavior changing statements to the team members. See, here's the thing. All human beings are bad without some type of boundaries. All human beings are bad with some type of responsibility. You see, core values are designed to protect the team from itself, to protect the individuals in the team from itself. So it's not as if I am designing the team values. You can design it if you're the owner operator, but it's better to get buy-in. If you're designing it from scratch, you don't have a team, you can just do it. I'll give you some book recommendations now to get this going. We've also got modules on this in my Inner Circle Group membership site. And the understanding with the core values is that once you've got the core values, the team is protected from its, like, it's a safe environment for which all team members can, they know what it is that I expect of them, what the team expects of them, and before they join the team. So key point, you've got to have core values. You've got to have core values. Here are a couple of required readings. If you want to get good at this thing, you want to grow a team, you've got to read Good to Great. You've also got to read Delivering Happiness by Tony Hsieh. You've also got to read a book called Team Code of Honor by Blair Singer. If you read those books, you'll understand the importance of it. The tighter the context, the higher the performance of the team. Once you've got core values, you have to hire, fire, and reward according to the core values. I'm going to do a whole podcast just on hiring according to the core values and the perfect, trust me, over 100 team members. I've used every kind of system, group interviews, single interviews, all types of systems. I'll tell you what I truly find the best for us is in a separate podcast is exactly how to hire someone. But once you've got core values, you've already done way more than what most businesses will ever, 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 ever do. So let's go through the structure of hire, fire, reward. Hire, I'm going to do a whole podcast on this, but first and foremost, when you hire according to core values, you start your interview by putting the core values in front of someone and getting them just to read it. Essentially, so I'll have a general conversation with them, but the first thing I'll do is I will put the core values in front of them with very early on in the interview, and I'll get them to read the core values out loud, and then I'll finish that by saying this sentence: any thoughts, fears, or concerns. You see, what most people do is they hire someone, then they tell them what the rules of the game are. What we want to do is we want to protect the context by telling the rules of the game way before they say yes. You see, the purpose of core values is to get them to either say, yes, this is amazing, I love it, or oh my word, I want to run a million miles. You see, most people are too afraid to be polarizing like that in a way where they're like, oh no, I don't want people to, you know, if what if people hate the core values. The point is, if your core values are too wishy-washy, people won't get a real understanding of what it's all about or what you're all about. So if I had to give you some type of guidance here, it would be you want your core values to be unapologetically yourself, right? So that's really, 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 really important. So we have core values. Let me run through the core values. First, hire. Straight away, your interview is going to be much better. So let me give you some examples. We've had things like, I show up to meetings, events, and socials. That is so directional, one directional. The thing is, you want to, when someone has a core value in their business, you want to be able to ask this question: Did you or did you not do that? As simple as that. If you say things like, I have integrity, you see, you must understand the word integrity has different meanings to different people. If you say things like, I am professional, well, professional to you is different to professional to me. You know, if you look at millennials and if you look at solopreneurs and online entrepreneurs, they think they're very professional, but in that context, they are. They may have tattoos, they may be, you know, not dressed smartly or appropriately, etc. So that's not directional enough. They are being appropriate in that context, but in this context, it's different. Maybe in your environment, it may not be, right? So for some people, I know they're like, they don't want that look in their practice, but they've got to say that early. You know, got to say that early in the business. Other things we have in our core values is I'm a role model. I play at 100% everything I do. Another one I have is I over communicate with my team members. Another one is no blame, justification, or denial. I am personally 100% responsible. Another one is I am always early, prepared, and present. Another one is rule number 9, BJ Palmer, I don't take myself too damn seriously. Another one is I enthusiastically praise my team members. We call that goosing. If you want to read more about that, read a book called Gung Ho, right? Another one we've had before is I strive to have higher energy than every single client that and team member specifically, but every single practice member that comes in the door. Another one we have is I treat all my team members with respect. So those are all different core values. Now, if someone joins a team agreeing to those core values before they join, they are going to be you're giving them the best chance to succeed because you're being upfront about the rules of the game before they join the team. So I am starting from the very beginning because how you start a relationship, it says a lot for how the relationship is going to continue to go. It's so important. So if I had to give you context for how to build that team, you have to have core values. So first of all, you have to hire according to core values. There's one little tip. I'm going to do a whole podcast on that, but you have to make sure the core values are at the hiring process. Then you have to fire according to the core values. This is a lot more of a gray area because in certain countries in the world, you've got to be careful. Like here in the United Kingdom, you can't just fire someone when they break a core value. It's not about that. People are going to break core. By the way, core values are there to keep us accountable, but doesn't mean we all do them all the time. No, we're going to mess up. All of us mess up. I mess up. Everyone messes up. But here's the key. When somebody messes up, the core values mean nothing, nada, if somebody's not calling them on the core values. So one of our core values used to be, I call team members on breaches of the code or core values. So you have to understand that people are not calling people on breaches of the core values. You can have a very, 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 very tough time to live those core values. This is so important. I promise you right now, you're going to be better than 99% of people on the planet of running a team if you just understand this one concept. So that's really all I can give you when it comes to firing. I'm going to say this is that I just recently did my Inner Circle Mastermind. We had in the United Kingdom, we have something called Dragon's Den, which is similar to Shark Tank. So we had one of those sharks, if you will, / dragons at our live mastermind. And he said this, he said, I promise you right now, your business life is going to be helped a lot by this one statement. And that is be brutally honest. And that's why one of my other mentors, Dan Kennedy, always says you need to hire thick-skinned people, but you need to address that in the interviews. I've just hired someone, a new team member, and I said that in the interview, I need someone thick-skinned because it's going to speed up my whole learning process with you if I'm able to be brutally honest with you. Are you going to be able to cope with that? So thick-skinned, surrounding yourself with thick-skinned people is possibly, if you will, from a team perspective, because we've all been around people who are too sensitive, all been around people who constantly need reassurance they're doing the right job. It's the most exhausting thing on the planet, and you really watch your P's and Q's. You really watch every word you say. You really have to dance around the issue, and in the effort of dancing around the issue when there's an issue, it takes so much longer time. It's killer. So that is a very key concept to understand now, is that if you are able to surround yourself with thick-skinned people, you're going to have an incredibly fast journey to the success that you want. So first of all, we said hire, then fire, next reward. You see, here's the thing. Most people don't live their core values because they're not speaking about their core values enough. They come up with this big thing to decide on their 6 to 10 core values. Less is more, trust me, because most people have too many and people don't even know what they are anyway. We used to have 12 and I really got it down to 7 at one point. We were way more effective at 7. And when you say reward according to your core values, here's one little tip. Remember, in anything in life, people have to hear something a day. This is a bit of a cliche, at least 7 times before they know it. Well, that's true. If your team is not rolling their eyes at the core values, or the team and the team meetings where core values are being mentioned, or the team exercises or team building exercises where you incorporate your core values, you're never going to live those core values. So one of the ways we live our core values is a simple thing, just called a rolling weekly prize. So here's one little tip for you. You can have a prize. We just give out a gift voucher, and it's a rolling prize. If I got given the prize this week, I've got to give it to someone else in the team the next week. It doesn't matter if it's a small team. The point is, that's even better. You get to mention the core values all the time. But here's the key. You are not allowed to reward something on anything other than the core values. So I can say, I just want to reward Peter this week because I tell you, he was amazing. He was amazing at over communicating that event. He was emailing us, he was texting us, he sent Facebook messages, etc. He was incredible. And then Peter can pass it on to say Mary, and he can say, and we've got a rule, we've got a little internal Facebook group, which I highly recommend you have, or WhatsApp group. And in the group, you've got to state, I want to praise, or my prize this week goes to Ryan, because he's always early prepared and present. He's always early. Oh, my word. He's the first one at work. He's always there. He's always prepared. He's always diligent with these things. So that's what I want to praise Ryan for. But can you see how you're driving home the cultural things? Let me take about 100 steps back. How do you come up with the core values in the first place? Well, here are two questions I want you to answer. One, that you and the team needs to answer this question. How do we know when the team is pumping? How do we know when the shift is amazing? What ways of acting or feeling do we have in the practice? So for instance, I know when my shift was rocking, there was great energy. There was high fives, there was hugs. That's one thing. So you might want to say, in this team, we always have high energy, right? There might be one statement. I also know, there's another question you want to answer. What really pisses you off? Both of those are answers to a great core value, because remember, the core values are there to protect yourself from yourself. So what pisses me off, this is not the team thing, this is my thing, is I am a stickler when it comes to time. I hate it when people are not on time. So that's my psychosis, not the team's. But if I want to get people on my team, I want them to know about my psychosis as quickly as possible. Does it make sense? I want them to know everything about me as quickly as possible. I don't want to hide. I don't want my dirty laundry coming out later in the relationship. I want the dirty laundry coming out soon, early in the relationship. So one of my core values straight away will be, I'm always early prepared and present. I'll never forget, I did an interview once with a girl, and one of our core values was, I always have high energy, or we have high energy. We strive to have the same energy for the first patient of the day as we do for the last patient of the day. And I said, any thoughts, fears, concerns? And she said to me, yes, I do have one. And it is that I have terrible energy. And I didn't say one other thing besides to her. Okay, great. So what do you think the best thing to do is? And she said, well, the best thing to do is for probably us not to start a relationship together because we have different values. I'm like, yep, you're probably right. And that was the end of the interview. But now think of the pain that saved me. Huge amount of pain, right? So key is, you've got to answer those two questions. Currently, how do you know when this practice is pumping, when this business is pumping? What does it feel like? What does it look like? What are people doing? And then the other one is, what things are happening currently that are pissing me off? And you've got to write down your core values according to that. And you can do the same thing, by the way. If you're doing it for the team, you can come up with your core values. Here's one way to engage a team. You come up with even 20 or 15 statements. You're going to get suggestions for those statements in all the books I recommended, Good to Great, Team Code of Honor, as well as Tony Hsieh's book, Delivering Happiness, about Zappos. And you can model a company, and then you can get them to vote on the ones I think are most relevant. That's one way to engage the team and get them to suggest one. We actually got one of our core values from that little box that said, suggest a core value that may be important to have high performance of the team. Another thing to consider is, when you're developing your core values, don't worry about getting them perfect. Just get them out, because you review your core values. If you know what you're doing and you're getting coached by someone who knows what they're doing, you review your core values every quarter. So it's not a big deal. Just get them out. You're going to get better at them. Like, you're going to reassess them. You're going to go, well, what's the point of that one? I can't see how it serves us anymore, et cetera, et cetera. Listen, guys, I hope you're learning something here. So today we spoke about the context being way more important than content. That's the first part of building a great team. First part of building a great team. Yes, other things we're going to talk about in subsequent episodes, other podcasts, is you've got to have a great onboarding process. You've got to have a great onboarding process. You've got to have recurring one-on-one meetings every quarter. You've got to have those. And in that, you're going to do something, a self-assessment of how they're going to self-assess themselves according to the core values. Very important. Let me say that again. So that one-on-one structure, in the one-on-one, you're going to look at statistics, you're going to look at some structures, one-on-one quarterly meeting. And one of the things you ask them to do is ask them to assess themselves on how much they think they're playing the game according to the core values. So you may say something like this: put a plus if you do it all the time, put a minus if you don't do it, put a plus minus if you do it some of the time but not all the time. And they will assess themselves. The funniest ones you get is when they say they do everything all the time, because nobody can do everything all the time. That's not the point. The point is that we're all going to mess up at times, but the core values correct our behavior so that we run better and we protect ourselves from ourselves. So very important. So maintaining the team is a different thing altogether. You have to have quarterlies, you have to have catch-ups together, you have, so that's quarterly group meetings, leadership meetings, you have weekly meetings also. There's a structure for that that we teach in my Inner Circle coaching group, as well as something called a scorecard. Those are all very, very, very important things. Accountability in teams is terrible most of the time. Most of the time, people distribute to-dos and none of the to-dos get done. And there's one key little secret that everyone's doing wrong, and we can clean it up very, very quickly if you follow the system. So listen, I hope you found today helpful. But today was the big part of today was, if you're going to build a world championship team, we have to understand first and foremost, the task at hand is great. Most businesses fail at it. Most businesses will not get it right. So why do you expect you are going to get it right without some type of structure, without some type of coaching, with some type of modeling in some way, shape, or form, without some type of podcast that's going to help you, without some type of book? It's naive, because most businesses don't get it right. Only two out of three businesses on the planet will not hire a single person. Most people will not, 1% of businesses get over £5 million. Most people will never hire more than a certain level. Most people don't even hire one person. So you be careful who you get the coaching from this. Most people have never gone past the lifestyle business, which is 12 people. I'm adamant about this. Someone who's got a bigger team can't. How can someone who's never run a proper team with complexity teach you how to run a team? It's crazy, because the complexity is really tough. So I hope today was helpful. Today was all about context when it comes to your team. That's the first step. My other podcast will tell you a little bit more about how to hire, the hiring process, and how to maintain the system, and more importantly, the structure that maintains the system on an ongoing basis that'll help you develop that thing. And lastly, I'll finish with this. Culture takes time. Please do not beat yourself up if you don't get this right. Your first quarterly meeting is going to suck. Your first set of core values, when you look back, is probably going to suck. All those things are going to suck. But as my greatest mentor said, you need to suck your way to success. You're going to suck in the beginning. But you have to understand that being bad at the thing is part of the price you have to pay to be good at the thing. Being bad at the thing is the tuition you need to pay to be good at the thing. So don't think you're going to be good at it from the word go. You will suck at it. And the founder of LinkedIn said this. He said, if you don't look back at your first launch of the thing, whatever it is, core values, product, service, whatever it is, and you're not incredibly embarrassed, you haven't gone nearly fast enough. Because you're never going to be perfect, right? That's why we review it every quarter. Love and appreciate you guys. This has changed my life, the stuff I'm teaching today. Please subscribe. If you find it helpful, please share this to anyone you know that may benefit from it. I promise you, I hold nothing back. I give everything away. And keep an eye out. I'm doing a couple crash courses on how to grow your practice through the insane marketing that we do in our business. So I hope it was helpful. Love and appreciate you. I'll see you very soon.
This has been the DC Practice Growth Show. Implement and share this episode. And remember, if you're not growing, you're dying.